Good evening. Welcome to the City of Morro Bay City Council meeting. This is a regular meeting. We're here at the Veterans Hall. It's 5:30 p.m. on Tuesday, February 25th, 2020, 209 Sur Street, Morro Bay. I will note that we have a quorum and call the meeting to order and just ask for a moment of silence in your own way, please. Thank you very much, and Councilmember Heller will lead us in the pledge. Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And Mr. City Attorney Chris Nermeyer, do we have a closed session report, sir?
No closed session reports, Mr. Mayor.
None. Thank you. That brings us to mayor and council members' reports, announcements. And who would like to begin? Anybody have any announcements? Yes, Marlis.
I almost never start.
Go ahead.
Announcements. So I'll start this time. Welcome, everybody. I just wanted to first update you on something that happened right here at the Vets Hall yesterday afternoon. We had what is called Community Network Services, and it involved 30 social service agencies that were here to help homeless people and low-income people connect them to existing services. And it turned out to be a great event. There were 63 people that showed up. There were 30 agencies present. And some of them, Dignity Health, for example, managed to help 60 people. Transitions Mental Health dealt with 24. Food Bank, 37. And Public Health, 20. And most of these people, over half of them, were elderly or at least over 50. And they were equally divided between men and women. And Mike's barbershop was here and gave haircuts. And so it turned out to be a very good event for the community. And then they all attended, or many of them did, the community dinner following that. So there were over 100 people at that. And I know we have given you statistics before, but I will repeat them. At the community dinner every Monday night, which is free, they have served they've served 23,000 meals since they started. So that's my update on that. I'm the representative on the county's Homeless Services Oversight Council and on the Estero Bay Alliance for Care, which is a network of social service agencies here in our local community. And that's how I happen to know about this and to report it to you. So anyway, we should be proud of our community for doing that. Then I want to tell you about two upcoming events. One is the Tunes and Noodles, which is the Morro Bay Lions, and this year they are collaborating with the Morro Bay Open Space Alliance to raise some money. And as you may or may not know, the Morro Bay Open Space Alliance has taken it upon itself to raise the money to pay back the city for purchasing Cerrito Peak or Eagle Rock, which it's also known as. So that is Saturday, March 14th, 5 to 9, here at the Vets Hall. Tickets are $20. Children are 10. And tickets are available in a number of places, but you can go to Mike's Barbershop, who obviously contributes a lot to our community, or Todd's Garage, and then there's a number of individuals. So there's music and food and big event, and it will help raise money for that will go back to the city coffers. And then the next day, Sunday, March 15th, the Morro Bay Open Space Alliance is having a St. Patrick's Day celebration, noon to 4, at Three Stacks and a Rock, which is Nano Brewery, which is 3118 North Main Street. and there'll be food and beer and music, and part of the proceeds will benefit the Morro Bay Open Space Alliance. So once more, you can help out. So those are my announcements today.
Thank you. Say over 56 was elderly? I just tried to clarify that.
It hit home,
and
Well, you know, they have 55 and over communities, so actually, yes, it is, and you can join AARP at 55. So
thank you.
It's new elderly.
I feel much worse than I did before. Thank you. Councilmember Heller, anything that, nothing to add to that. Councilmember Davis.
Yes. We are invited to attend a groundbreaking ceremony this coming Saturday at 10 a.m., for bocce ball courts and a greenhouse project that will be constructed on the vacant lot at the corner of Shasta and Dune Street, which is across the street from the library and across the street from the community center. And this is a project that's been a while in coming to fruition because of funding problems. I want to thank Scott Collins for putting together a consortium of people, the El Morro Church, and I want to thank the mayor for helping us with that. El Morro Church, Morro Bay Active Adults, and Morro Bay and Bloom are all going to work together to construct the bocce ball courts. Public Works is going to do the heavy work, the grading of the lot and the fencing, and they will help oversee the project. So this is a great partnership and a great collaboration and a reflection of our community values. Second item, I think a lot of people know that County Parks has been working on a bicycle pedestrian pathway to connect Morro Bay to Cayucas along the bluffs on the west side of Highway 1. And that project was stalled for quite a while because the Chevron owners would not allow Parks access to get the information they needed. But since that property is now converting to public ownership, I reached out to my friend Elizabeth Cavanaugh last week at County Parks to find out what their plan now is to proceed. She says that now they're going to be able to get on site, do the soils testing that they need to do, to complete the design and apply for a coastal permit. And then they will continue to finish up the construction plans. And she has asked the city to partner with County Parks to apply for a state grant to actually fund the construction of the project. So this, again, has been a long-delayed project. And now we're moving forward, and I appreciate the leadership of this council in helping to bring those Chevron lands in under city ownership. And then final item, I will have office hours this coming Saturday at Sun and Buns from 9 until 9:45. I'll have to leave at 9:45 so I can go to the groundbreaking ceremony for the bocce ball courts. So thank you.
Councilmember Addis.
Yes. Well, I had the honor of attending the mayor's meeting last Friday as pro temp mayor, and there were three presentations, one from our League of Cities representative who was talking about right-sized housing solutions and making sure communities like Morro Bay are well represented at the state level so that we don't have solutions handed down from the state that are really better suited for larger metropolitan areas. So keeping that alive. And then Tommy Gong was there talking about the March 3rd elections. And Supervisor Arnold was there talking about the IWMA plastic bag ban. So very informational. And then for those of you that have children that will be 5 years old by September 1st, Kinder registration is coming, and so you'll want to be watching for where you can register your child for school. And we do have the new dual immersion kindergarten program at Baywood for the community to be aware of.
Good. Great. Thank you. Thank you for that. Being a tourist community, not to alarm you, but the HHS today and CDC issued warnings with regard to coronavirus. And, you know, we get a lot of international travelers here. So just for your own health note, coronavirus produces symptoms similar to the flu. However, it can cause secondary illness in people that have suppressed immune system, chronic diseases, are elderly, I guess over 56. And the primary prevention really is one, if you're in contact or you see somebody that's actively coughing or wearing a mask, you know, you want to have space between you and that individual because there is respiratory transmission. Two, hand washing. The virus does survive on surfaces for as long as 14 days. So if you're eating or out or at home and you have a number of international travelers in the house, be sure you wash your hands a lot to get rid of that. It's hand-to-mouth transmission. And we've only had in the U.S. now 14 cases and then the cases that came over from that one ship. But it's early and there may well be more. And there are precautions and warnings being given to cities that receive a lot of international tourists. So I would just call that to your attention. Thank you, Councilmember Davis, for talking about the bocce ball court event. I was going to mention that, but you covered it. So looking forward to that. With that, Mr. Collins, any reports from you, sir?
All right. Just want to make community aware that we had a really good discussion. Council had a really good discussion about the 10-year financial forecast, which also included a review of the community survey, which was conducted in October and early November of last year. And the results of that survey is available online on the front page of the city website. We encourage folks to review that. Also, some good news related to the water reclamation facility. We received word from Fish and Wildlife that they've completed their consultation for the red-legged frog, which means the EPA can complete the WIFIA loan within the next several weeks and allow us to begin construction of the wharf project. So that is good news, looking somewhere in the middle of March to begin construction. That's all. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. And I believe we do have a special presentation this evening. Chief Knuckles, I'm going to turn it over to you, sir.
Mr. Mayor and Council, thank you so much for allowing us to make this presentation. This is a great thing that's been happening to our community for the last 15 years, a great bunch of folks that have not only raised the awareness of the emergency levels that we want in our community, but also helped us raise a lot of money. And I'd like to introduce you to the president of the Friends of the Morro Bay Fire Department, Carla Whitsum.
Welcome, Carla.
Thank you and good evening, Council, staff, and community. Local community members established the Friends of Morro Bay Fire in 2004. One of our founding members is here, Keith Taylor. He and his wife are very active in doing that. And as much as I have this all written out, I cannot articulate fire-related equipment and things that we're doing as much as one of our former chiefs can. So I'm going to step aside and ask Jeff Jones to come up. We also have with us this evening Ken Vesterfeldt and Doug Riddell, who are board members.
Welcome, Jeff.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. It's a pleasure to be in front of you again. It seems like it just seems like it was yesterday. I was sitting over there where Chief Knuckles was, but 2003, I guess, was makes me, what is that, older than 56?
56.
Yeah. Darn it. Okay, so what the Friends of the Fire Department, we were established in 2004, and our mission is to provide financial and community support to both the fire department and its employees. And we do that in a number of ways. And one of the ways we support the fire department is it's really expensive for a young firefighter candidate to get through both a fire academy and a paramedic academy. So when we have an employee of this fire department in the reserve ranks who's in good standing, we have scholarship opportunities for them. Pretty much if you're in good standing and you ask, we'll support you to the tune of $750 per candidate for the fire academy and $1,000 for the paramedic academy. And so we that's one of the ways we do that. One of our other missions is to help the fire department in acquiring specialized equipment that is really outside the normal purview of what they would need. So an example might be the last time I think we did urban search and rescue equipment and some equipment for the CERT team, things that just aren't in their daily operational needs. So we're really excited to be able tonight, we come before you. Our money, where does it come from? It's all through fundraising. Mm-hmm. So we have very generous members of our community who reach out, and whether it's a $5 donation or a $10,000 donation, we've accumulated a little over $100,000 in a fund that we keep, and we support the chief and the things that he hopes to be able to do that are outside the budget. So tonight we're excited because we're here to donate $24,057 back to the community. And we're doing that in the form of two $750 scholarships. One is to Peter Rivera, who's been a reserve with the fire department since, I believe, 2016. And also another reserve, Riley Boughton Pirano. She's a new reserve at about a year and a half in. They're both not here tonight because they're at the Fire Academy actually doing what it is we're supporting them to do. We also have a paramedic program person. His name is Gregory Whelan. He started with the department in 2014, doing a great job, and he's going through the Cuesta paramedic program. And so tonight we're going to present Chief Knuckles a check for $1,000 to pass on to him. The things we do is to try to find the specialized equipment. The chief did come to us and ask if we would help offset the cost of some cardiac monitors. Personally, it seems like that would be within Measure Q or the city budget in the EMS fund. But we're coming tonight to donate. The request was $21,557.50 to the fire department to help maintain the Bertha Schultz Fund intact. So tonight, again, we're here to donate. If there's anybody out in the community who would like to donate back to us, we're always welcome to take cash and membership donations, and you can reach us through the fire department. So, again, Chief, we have some money for you. President Carla.
There's three checks for that. And here's a check for the city of Morro Bay.
Thank you.
You know, the request was made last year because of some changes in our San Luis Obispo County EMS protocols that require us to have a certain modality in our heart monitors for a certain type of heart attack. And we're noticing a significant change in our survivability rates with heart attacks in our community. But we were able to, and this last year, we took advantage of a purchase. These are rebuilt models. These are extremely expensive. We do have three of them. And by their action helping us raise money, and also Measure Q did also help out with this purchase, we're able to save the city over $100,000 because these monitors are now pushing $40,000 to $45,000 a piece now. And if it wasn't for the friends to help us out at the last minute to make sure we can get this purchase, to get these monitors that we needed by July 1st of this year by protocol, that we wouldn't be able to get it done. So the friends of the Morro Bay Fire Department, they're dear to my heart. They're my mentors. I do have an ex-council member and two fire chiefs on it, so they keep me in line. Mm-hmm. And but it's just a great bunch of people they are, and they got their heart for this community. And thanks for your time.
Thank you, Chief, and thanks again to the Friends of the Fire Department. What a fantastic opportunity to not only have new equipment that can be life-saving, but also to offset $100,000 in city costs is just tremendous. I just want to give a shout-out to you. Anybody in the community that wants to donate, be part of this great organization, continue the legacy that is being established here. I think I heard contact the chief, or is there a website or a phone number you want to call? Contact the chief. Okay, Chief Knuckles, your number is? 555. Don't say 555-1212.
You can contact us at the fire station. It's 805-772-6242.
Great, and thank you again for all that you do for the community. Thank you, Chief, for your advocacy and for your continued excellence in providing the services that you provide. Appreciate that. You can clap. With that, that brings us up to the business spot. Joel Anderson is here from Mobile Gas Station. Joel, Come on forward and tell us a little bit about your business, sir. And welcome.
I'm Joel Anderson, manager of the Morro Bay Mobile Mart. I would like to thank our mayor.
Right into the, a little bit into the mic there. Yeah, perfect.
Our city council, staff, Chamber of Commerce, for inviting me here today. Again, thank you. I've been a working member of this community for almost 18 years now at the Morro Bay Mobile Mart. That means I've been watching couples start families, babies growing into children, young people maturing into adults. Some have moved away, some have come back. And when they do, it's like, are you still here? Being a part of this wondrous community comes with certain duties, and that is being a good neighbor. For example, giving our annual grant for Del Mar Elementary School to help their awards program, purchasing advertisement to support the Morro Bay Pirates, or sponsoring trophies for the Morro Bay Car Show. So much fun. Last year, we awarded a big trophy to a 61 Chevy. It had been in their family since 1963 and had all original parts. Ironically, it was owned by Gary, who for many years worked at the other car wash in town, but ours does a much better job. We also direct visitors downtown. People coming from all over the world stop for a fill-up and maybe a cup of coffee. They may come here from Europe, Scandinavia, South America, Asia, the Middle East, Africa, or the South Pacific, to name a few places. But everyone comes here to see Highway 1. But they'd sometimes ask, is there anything in Morro Bay to see? Or is there a good place to eat? And we just tell them, just head down the hill, and if your feet get wet, you've gone too far. Keeping our town safe is also our goal. Our canopy lights may seem bright at night, but in doing so, along with our outside cameras, our customers and their families feel safe. We cooperate with local authorities, giving them access to our security systems, which, by the way, was purchased and is maintained locally. Our motto for the Morro Bay Mobile Mart is this: family friendly, take care of our locals. We will not provide offensive merchandise. Children are most welcome. Our snacks are fresh, utilizing local businesses, and our coffee the best. We try to keep our facility clean and neat, in spite of George, our local junk food junkie seagull, who managed to take his fair share out of the trash and scatters it everywhere. Safe, clean, family-friendly, and being a good neighbor, the Morro Bay Mobile Mart, just up the hill at the roundabout, is a good place to visit. Thank you.
Great, Joel. Appreciate it. Indeed. I like your motto. Okay, with that, I will open up general public comment. Any individuals wishing to comment on any items on the agenda for which you can't stay, now would be the appropriate time, or any other comments you'd like to make. I'll start with my speaker slips. First of all, Rigmore. Rigmore, welcome. Long time no see.
Yes, hello. I don't really want to be here, but I'm here. good evening, Mr. Mayor, Council, and staff. My name is Rigmore, and I live here on Surf Street. None of you live here, so why should you care whether you reduce our property values or put our life, health, and safety in jeopardy? Well, I think you should care, and I actually think you do. But instead of improving and repairing our great Surf Street stairs, which gave all of Morro Bay residents, guests, visitors, exercisers, etc., valuable access to our waterfront, you just tore them down and fenced the access off. You also allowed our Veterans Memorial Building to be a food pickup center, then a Monday night dinner gathering place for homeless, and now you're considering making it a homeless warming center. We have already had lots of issues here from the Monday evening dinners. It baffles me how it can be more important for you to support the homeless than us who live here and pay property taxes, especially when I know that you all know these homeless people are a mixed group. Regular, capable homeless who could get a job anytime but choose to be homeless for whatever reason, and those who are severely disturbed or into drugs or alcohol. I know many of the homeless here. I have tried to have them come down here to the city council to comment, but they all decline. The 10 to 12 or so of the first group are making it fine on their own and just want to be left alone. They worry that if you make it too cozy, more will settle here, and they do not like that scenario. The second group, with severe mental problems, drugs, etc., no amount of free food, clothing, or anything else is going to make a dent. Morro Bay is already a great place to be homeless in, so please don't make it more desirable. This could easily turn into a homeless haven. Help the working people who need assistance. I have not seen helping or creating more dependency for homeless have worked in the other lenient California cities. But if you or other commenters that's come to these meetings insist, then choose your own neighborhood or let your church, which receives donations and pays no taxes, take in a few. Or at least figure an area with good lighting and away from residential homes. Maybe like the old dollar store up there, or senior center, for example, or something like that. Not here where we live. I really don't think it belongs anywhere here in Morro Bay, but that is really up to you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick Moore. Next up for public comment is Susan Stewart. Susan, welcome.
Good evening. I'm Susan Stewart. I am a resident and I own Beads by the Bay on Morro Bay Boulevard, but I am reading this for Beverly Durer, who is the owner of Grandma's Yogurt. She says, last Saturday morning, February 22nd, I arrived at our business, Grandma's Frozen Yogurt Crepes and Waffle Shop, around 7:30 to find that the mural on the side of our shop had been vandalized. I was stunned with a myriad of feelings because we all work hard as downtown family-owned merchants to have our corner of the world clean and safe for our local community and our visitors. Our merchant, neighbor Abe, owner of Grape Leaf Deli, was arriving to work as well and had just called the police department to notify them of the vandalism. He stayed with me until City of Morro Bay police officer Christian Galaz arrived within minutes. Officer Galaz took the damage seriously, began with a solution-oriented attitude, reassuring me he would assist, and walked me into our business to ensure that it was safe inside. He left, letting me know he would be in contact shortly. Within minutes, I received a telephone call back from him that he had reached the City of Morro Bay's maintenance department and that they would be responding soon. I want to personally thank Officer Galaz and his commanding officer for their immediate reassuring support, the maintenance department personnel who responded on a Saturday morning to help clean as best as possible, and the many local community members who called to make sure we were okay and offer some solutions and help whenever needed. This is what makes Morro Bay so special. Sincerely, Lenny and Beverly Durer. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Appreciate that very much. Next up for public comment is Erica Crawford. Erica, our CEO and president of the Morro Bay Chamber.
Good evening, Mayor and Council and city staff. Just a couple of quick chamber announcements. Tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. at the Inn at Morro Bay, the chamber will be hosting an event called Meet the Press, not like what you see on TV. Rather, this is to sort of fill a vacuum of advertising to our own backyard. As we know, our TBIT is very well funded and does an excellent job pulling people from outside of our area to our area. But we have a very diverse and rich region, and we can be pulling people from San Luis Obispo or Tascadero and Paso Robles regularly and often and effectively. So some of the questions we'll be asking tomorrow, how do you see the difference between earned media and paid media? What is the best way to get the attention of the media with a story idea that is time-sensitive? And our panelists will be Camelia Clannam from the Slow New Times, Dean Sullivan from Estero Bay News, and then Nick Mattson, who owns Colony Media, and it'll be moderated by Marianne Stansfield, who, as you know, is mental marketing. So she'll be able to close that loop on what she does to attract people from outside of the area and how she can help our local businesses to attract people from our own backyard. Another event to put on your radar and the community's radar is the Housing Summit. The SLO Chamber has done an excellent job over the years in educating public and private sector leaders on housing issues. Scott Collins himself was on a panel in 2018. My board chair, Steve Peck, was on a panel in 2018. It covers regional issues. Morro Bay absolutely has a seat at the table, so I encourage everybody to attend. It's April 3rd, and the tickets do sell out. And just to kind of update you at some of the tables that I've been at in the last couple of weeks, I had a very productive meeting with Greg Haas, who, as we know, is Salud Carbajal's legislative assistant. Just keeping up to date on offshore wind. I participated with both Scott Graham and Scott Collins at Visit SloCal's Envision 2050 feedback session. That's their destination marketing strategic plan. I engaged with REACH, which is the Regional Economic Action Collaborative, formerly the Hourglass Project. They're debuting their jobs plan on March the 16th. That's a plan to add 15,000 high-paying jobs to our regional economy in the next 10 years. So just to kind of let you know that we're at the tables in the region. And that's while on the home front, my development director has been adding new members to the chamber. We've done ribbon cuttings. We have another one tomorrow. So things are bustling. Thank you.
Thank you for the update. Appreciate it. Next up for public comment is Linda Winters. Linda, welcome.
I have to get my ancient body up. I'm 55 and elderly. What is 72?
Ancient, I think.
The ancient wise ones. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Mayor. I was hoping that you would announce my new title, but if you didn't, I will announce it.
I was going to let you do that.
Okay. Now I am now known as Chapter 1814 GSMO Representative Linda Winters. And if you want to know what all those letters and numbers mean, you'll have to ask me later. One of our main objectives when we first began our journey was to build a strong line of communication between all of the mobile home parks and the city offices and agencies and departments. We have reached out to many of the city offices, and we have found, and they have found us too. Most recently, Los Osos Cares Community Outreach, headed by Meredith Bates back there, invited us to one of their forums. We didn't have quite as many nonprofits in that forum as you did yesterday, but we had several of them, representing low-income families, seniors from Cayucas, Morro Bay, and Los Osos. You don't realize how many folks need help until you're at one of those meetings, and how many kind and wonderful people that spend hundreds of volunteers' hours sharing their talents and resources and time to aid these folks. Los Osos Care has developed a senior survey for 2020. There's a picture of it up on the projector. They are asking anyone over 55, ancient ones, that live in Cayucas to Los Osos to answer the questions, what would make your life better? The giving categories like transportation, housing, food, clothing, exercise class, home repairs, senior service centers, and legal aid, 22 items in all. They also ask for emergency contact information about people. This is an anonymous survey, but you can use your name if you wish. These surveys need to be back to the senior centers in town by March 31st. My job is to reach as many mobile home park residents as we can. I've left a small stack of surveys on the back table. If you live in a neighborhood that has lots of seniors, grab a survey, make some copies, and be a good neighbor and distribute them, helping our senior citizens to get services they really need. That's your mobile home park assignment for tonight. Your other assignment, because it is that Tuesday, lots of goodies tonight, because tomorrow you can't do it. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. That's all of the slips I have. General public comment for items on the agenda for which you cannot stay or any general items is still open. Seeing none, I will close public comment, bring it back to council. Don't have any follow-up items necessarily to address. Thanks for those community announcements. Very much appreciate that. That brings us to item A, consent agenda. I'll entertain a motion and or any items that you would possibly want to pull. A3. Any others? Okay, seeing none, I will... go ahead.
He's going to make a motion.
Yeah, I'm going to take public comment first. Okay. So we are going to pull A3, and I'll open up public comment for any items on the consent agenda. Thanks, Betty, for that reminder. Welcome, Betty.
Good evening. My name's Betty Winholtz. I have three comments. Excuse me. They're mostly related to the WARF monthly review. One of them is if you could comment on the fact that it states that you will be raising the maximum price on the project, and yet our bills aren't going to go up because somehow there's a contingency that's going to cover it. But we've already had a bunch of change orders, and there's more change orders coming, so I need some clarification on how that's going to work. Also, the website that Mr. Caceres maintains, I feel, is out of date. There's very little there posted that's recent, and I'm wondering if that can be updated. And the third item is, on your trip to D.C., for the CMAQ, I noticed that there's no meeting at WIFIA or anything related to the sewer plant. Is that because there won't be any comment about that, or has that just not been scheduled yet?
Thank you, Betty. Public comment for consent agenda is open. Anybody wishing to come forward now, please do so for the consent agenda. Seeing none, I will bring it back to council and entertain a motion to approve A1, A2, A4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10.
Also move.
Second.
Motion by Councilmember Addis to approve all but A3, second by Councilmember Davis. Any further discussion? Not. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
And Councilmember Heller, going to pull A3. Maybe I'll just answer Mrs. Winholt's question. The third question hasn't been scheduled yet. Very much planned to do that. So in the process of being scheduled, WIFIA EPA. Councilmember Heller, and then we'll get to your other two questions as well.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
So sure.
I have my regular questions for this. It's on.
Get close. Get
closer.
Yeah.
Okay. How's that? So in looking at this report, I have kind of some regular questions. The first section has to do with the funding agency coordination. First of all, I'm glad to hear that the frog lobbyists have been successful in resolving the issues with the gate or whatever the issue was. The WIFIA financing. So there's a note in the report stating that reimbursable funding for eligible costs up to $61.7 million. Could you explain to me what the eligible or ineligible costs might be?
Do you know what page that might be on? I just want to.
It's on page one, I believe.
Thank you.
Anybody know the answer to that?
It's page 24 in the 194-page agenda packet.
Oh, got it. Thank you.
It's on page one of the item.
So why don't you repeat the question, Jeff? Sorry.
Yeah, so the question is, it talks about eligible costs up to $61.7 million. I'm just wondering what the eligible or ineligible costs might be.
WIFIA covers project costs. It includes you can roll in interest and those kind of instead of paying interest now, you can roll that in, you know, since we aren't going to plan on payment back until the project has been completed. All the construction costs that are included in the project, all the costs that are associated with the budget that we show in our budget book, and that is provided in the mid-year report. Beyond the planning phase that we've already submitted reimbursements for. And obviously we can't submit reimbursements to WIFIA that we submit to for SRF once we secure that funding. You know, it can only be reimbursed from one source.
Okay, so the obviously the 61.7 doesn't cover the cost of the wharf. So will that be paid for with the SRF funding or cash on hand, or how's that going to work?
Excuse me. The SRF is committed to paying for the remainder of the project. The rate study that we did and what rates were built on assumes that we would use cash on hand in addition to WIFIA financing and SRF financing. When we brought forth the documents for WIFIA, we indicated that we were signing the documents for up to the maximum amount we were approved. And the reason is that is the WIFIA rate right now, if we sign today, is about 1.7%, which is a very low interest rate. And we wanted to have options for the council if you wanted to fund capital, for instance, given that it's such a low interest rate financing option. Doesn't mean we have to draw down that much, but we would have the option to do that.
Okay. And then the next section, environmental checklist, 1.12. I think that's on the same page or perhaps the next page, but I'm glad to hear that you got the biological opinion back. That's excellent news. According to this report, which may be outdated now, it looks like you will be able to issue the NTP on the wharf plant itself as early as March 15th. So is that, are we on track for that?
Based on the conversations with WIFIA staff, that seems to be right on track.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I have some general questions I'm going to go through, and I've broken them apart into wharf questions, the conveyance facilities project, which is all the piping and the pumps. So starting off at the wharf question, so is it the city's intention to issue the NTP for the wharf at South Bay Boulevard, even though the actual cost of the installation of piping and pumps needed to connect the new sewer plant to the existing collection system is not known?
Yes, we do plan to issue that NTP based on our contractual requirements with Blackfeach Feelants to get them going as soon as possible. That's always been the plan, to issue notice to proceed for construction of the wharf prior to the conveyance facilities being designed. The design being completed. I'm not getting.
That's good.
Hey, GP, if you could just turn the volume up for Mr. Leivig.
Hello? Okay.
There you go.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that. So apparently, then it's been discussed, and it's noted in this report that there are more proposed change orders for the wharf that are in the pipeline. So my question is, have you received these proposed change orders? And if not, when do you expect to get them for staff and the team to review?
We've received some of those change orders. We've commented on those, sent them back to Blackfeach Feelants, getting more refined cost estimates from them. The program management team will review those costs once we've have agreement between staff and the design team. Those will be brought forward to our Public Works Advisory Board for review, and then on to council for recommendation of approval on those that are deemed necessary for the project.
Okay, and then you're expecting to bring those to council in the second meeting of March, I believe. The report said 3/24/20. So
that's what is scheduled currently.
Is that the plan? Okay. Also in the report, it noted you expect to get the 90% design deliverable for the new sewer plant by the 21st of March. So is that still on track to receive those documents?
Yes, we have those, the 90% design plans.
Okay. Going on to conveyance facilities. So it looks like you plan to award the construction contract on July 9th, 2020. Now, is this a drop-dead date in order to keep the project on track, or do you still have float in the schedule if that contract is not awarded on that date, or what's the status of that July 9th?
No, there's still float that remains within the schedule. So it could, depending on how long it takes the contractor to complete their submittals, it could go as late as the first meeting in August, and we would still end up with sufficient float to deliver the project.
Okay, so it could go into August without an issue. Okay. does the city have a plan if the lowest construction bid on this portion of the project exceeds the $24 million budgeted for construction of it? What is the city's plan on how to remedy that?
We would evaluate those bids and see if they are reasonable costs. There are several options for the city to do. We could reject all bids and rebid the project with a change to the design. We could choose to award to the lowest responsible bidder. And those are really the options. We can't negotiate a bid project. So we either reject all bids and modify the project, or we award the project. And there is contingency available for that portion of the project. And as Ms. Calloway informed us, the rates for financing are much lower, so we have more room to the interest rates on the debt are much lower, so there's more room that we have for adjusting those prices without affecting the rate to the ratepayers.
Okay. So there's also a note in the report that the city received the 90% design documents for the piping project a couple of weeks ago on the 10th of February. Is that right?
So that's correct.
You've had those since then. That's good. Have these been posted to the website?
No, we're still reviewing those documents. So once we complete our review and accept those as 90%, we'll post those to the website.
Okay. So I am the liaison, the council's liaison to the Public Works Advisory Board. We had our first meeting with the new members last week. How soon can you issue those documents to them as well as the PCOs for the WRF so that they have time to review those before their meeting that's coming up on March 18th?
There's no intention for the Public Works Advisory Board to review the 90% plans. That's an interim design deliverable that we'll be reviewing. The next step in reviewing, with the exception of the traffic control provisions and the local labor as directed by council, we will be moving the rest of the plans on to final plans for advertising.
So, as we all know, the WRF CAC has been dissolved, and we have the PWAB now in charge of technical review of PCOs and so forth. I must tell you that we've got a great group of seven folks on that board, only one or two of which have looked at any drawings for this project. It seems to me if they're going to review PCOs and other technical issues going forward that they need to be reviewing plans at this point.
Each of the proposed change orders will come with a design drawing illustrating what the original design was and what the change is proposed. So I think it's sufficient information to, along with the staff presentation, for the PWAB to make recommendations.
Okay. Those are the questions that I have. I can't overstate how unprepared the PWAB is.
Can I hold you for discussion?
I
had a couple comments. Questions.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Could you address Ms. Winholt's question? The two questions. Number one, raising the max price on the project, and quote unquote has no effect on rates. Could somebody?
So increases in costs, there is contingency available for each of the components. And additionally, as I stated, the cost of money is less, so there's more overhead or more headroom there to work within the rate structure that we have.
And
emphasize that the council cannot just raise rates without going through the Prop 218 process. So it's not a simple process, as we all know. The website, we'll work with the program management team to keep that relevant and updated.
Okay. So what I'll do is entertain a motion, Jeff, and then I'll open it up to discussion. So is there a motion for approval of
I move we approve A3? Item A3.
I'll second.
Motion by Councilmember McPherson to approve item A3, second by Councilmember Addis. And any further discussion? Go ahead, Jeff.
Thank you.
You bet.
So for the record, on this particular issue, I would like to restate that I am the council's liaison to the Public Works Advisory Board, also known as the PWAB. The council decided recently to disband the Water Reclamation Facility Citizens Advisory Committee, known as the WRFCAC, and assigned their duties of reviewing technical project documents to the PWAB. And City Clerk, I have a copy of this, so you don't need to struggle with getting it word for word. This means that the PWAB will now be receiving the design documents, proposed change orders, etc., that involve technical issues that the CFAC folks are not qualified to address. Based on that, I am asking the council and staff to provide the PWAB with the 90% piping design documents received by the city on February 2nd. By the end of this week, so that the new members of the PWAB, who know very little about the project, will have time to review them before their meeting on March 18th. I also ask that whatever proposed change orders have been received by staff will be issued to the PWAB this week for the same purpose, allow them time to review the proposed change orders as well as the current documents for the project prior to their meeting on March 18th. I personally don't see how this advisory board can advise if they don't have a chance to review the current documentation for the project. They've been tasked with it, but to not issue them the documents is not going to get us there. That's all I have to say.
Yes, further discussion.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. I would just like to say that the PWAB has been kept fully informed about this project from the beginning. It's been always on the director's report, so they are quite aware of what has been going on with the water reclamation facility from the very beginning. They're staffed by engineers. There's a number of engineers on there, and they're up to date on the project. They have been given a briefing on the project, a complete up-to-date briefing on the project as well. And so I believe they're fully ready to take on what the council has said this committee should take on. And basically what we're asking for and what we asked the WRFCAC for was to have our advisory boards comment on any issue that's coming before the council so that we have a good review before it comes to council. The 90% design is not coming to council. We are not. This is a technical, fully technical issue that has been vetted along the way and that we have confidence that our program manager and their staff at Carollo can handle without any kind of future or additional oversight. So I really disagree with your recommendations, Jeff.
Thank you. And if my recollection is correct, the recommendation for disbanding WRFCAC came with the subcommittee advisory committee of the council's recommendation to do that and move the duties to PWAB, and I do believe that Councilmember Heller was an affirmative in that. So I just make that note myself. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion to accept? Then I'll call roll call vote.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
No.
Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-1.
Thank you. That concludes the consent agenda. Moving to business item C1. This is the fiscal year 2019-20 mid-year budget performance and status report for the 6-month period ending December 31st, 2019. We're going to receive the fiscal year 1920 mid-year budget performance and status report and authorize any adjustments as recommended, and then adopt resolution number 19-20 authorizing staff to proceed with the second quarter budget adjustments if it's your will. And lastly, receive the 2019-2020 capital improvement plan year update, and then consider resolution 2020 appropriating Castle Wind community benefit project funds totaling $250,000 to the North and South T-Pier capital projects. And with that, I will turn it over to let's see who'll be Ms. Calloway. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening. If AGP can help with the PowerPoint, I'll lead off with this. Is as you mentioned, the 1920 mid-year budget update. It comes to you every year at this time as we go back and evaluate our results through the first 6 months of the fiscal year. That's a more indicative time frame for the remainder of the 6 months. When we do our first quarter, it's still somewhat of a projection at that point. Overall, we have pretty limited recommendations in our general fund. They total up $153,000. $221,000 is in other revenue, and that's primarily our mutual aid revenue, as well as our fire inspection fees. Or our mutual aid, our fire inspection fees are under charges for services, and that should be $24,000. And sorry for the typo with the 86. It's $24,260. We also are recommending a $16,000 budget adjustment for donations. That is money that the active seniors have raised to resurface the pickleball courts out at Del Mar Park. So there's an offsetting expenditure item for that. And then $2,500 in our fines and forfeitures. In addition, we have, it's not on the slide, but in the staff report and in the resolution, there's a decrease of about $111,000 for IT services. Those services are actually budgeted for in our IT fund, so we're just removing it from the general fund budget. We will continue to monitor our revenue sources. We did just meet with our sales tax consultant this afternoon, and they indicated that we're right on par with our budget number for sales tax. So that was a good indication, and we'll monitor property tax closely going into the third quarter and come back to council with any updates on that. Our general fund expenditures, also fairly moderate adjustments that we're recommending, $152,618 in total. $85,000 of that is in salaries and benefits. That's really related to our mutual aid support. That's that offsetting revenue adjustment that we have included in here as well. As of the start of the year, we are required to provide fire inspections for all of our buildings, our public buildings. So there's a $24,000 revenue and expenditure adjustment. We are collecting fees for that to pay for that service. So there's not an overall net impact to the general fund. We've incorporated a speed survey. We're required to do one of those every 10 years. Our speed survey is currently out of date. It was last completed in 2009. So we would like to complete that and have that done by the end of the fiscal year if possible. The surfacing of the pickleball courts at $16,000. And then we have interest savings from our lump sum payment to PERS that happened in July, totaling almost $43,000. With those general fund adjustments in mind, we have a projected year-end balanced budget. Again, we're going to monitor a lot of our key revenues going into the third quarter and make sure we maintain that, and we'll come back to council with a third quarter update, usually in May. For the council's awareness, this report was presented to CFAC last week at their meeting, and they did concur with the recommendations in the report by a vote of 5-0-2, with two members being absent. If we look at our enterprise funds, we have quite a few adjustments in our harbor fund. We're increasing our revenues in that fund by $81,000. There's a little bit of grant money that we expect to come in this year. But the majority of that is $50,000 in our lease rents that we're projecting through the end of the year. And then a $15,000 transfer in, that is to fund security enhancements at the Harvard apartment. And we'll talk a little bit more about that when we get to our capital projects update. Also, $62,300 in expenditures, primarily for our launching facility rehab project to replace the parking kiosk at the launch ramp, and then some funds in there for if we need repairs for the ice machine. In our water fund, an $81,000 adjustment, and that is to purchase, that's out of the equipment replacement fund. There's $275,000 in fund balance. It would be utilizing fund balance to purchase a water valve exercising piece of equipment. And then for our sewer fund, there's a $19,000, almost $20,000 proposed adjustment to install fiber optic. When we get to this next slide, we're going to talk about a fiber optic install for the other city facilities. Well, we plan to do that, or hope to do that with council approval. We would intend to run the fiber down to the corner of Quintana. That's going to be needed for the wharf to connect in, so it seemed to make sense to do that at the same time. With our other funds, we have a list of things we'd like to include in the budget, all using non-general fund sources of revenue. Our security improvements, it would be much like what we have done at our city hall, with adjustments that fit each of the buildings and the work that's completed at those buildings. We would use $37,000 of government impact fees fund balance to do those improvements at the Public Works Community Development Building, our recreation office area, and our active adult center. The total project also includes Harbor. The Harbor Fund, as we discussed, would pay for that, about $15,000. Our parking in lieu fees, we brought forward to council an EV charging grant. It's a cost-sharing grant, $26,000 in grant funds, and then $22,000 from our parking in lieu fees. So this would appropriate that match. Our strategic investment and spending fund, there's about $145,000 sitting in that fund that's been reserved for fiber throughout the city. In October, this past October, the council approved a budget for our public safety power shutdown. And part of that budget included putting a generator on City Hall. The long-term plan has been to move our server system and IT system up to the fire department, where they have a more secure, weatherproofed storage area for that. So while we purchased the fuel tanks as part of the PSPS, we evaluated options for our IT and phone systems and received some quotes to install fiber optic, which would then allow us to move our IT infrastructure up to the fire department at City Hall, the public services, recreation, and police, totaling $29,000 above what was already budgeted for PSPS. So we are recommending to do that rather than install the generator and use our strategic investment spending fund to kind of kick off that overall city fiber optic install. And then lastly, there's a transfer to fund the first phase of our landscape project in the cloisters. That's $50,000 from their accumulation fund. From Measure Q, we discussed this at length with the committee last week. Again, they approved this, and we're requesting $161,677 from the unassigned fund balance to fund $48,000 in fire safety equipment training and repairs to two of the command vehicles. Purchase a police vehicle, this is $43,600. This is really a carry forward from 18-19 that was approved in last year's budget. A portion of the vehicle was paid for, but we didn't receive the vehicle until this fiscal year, so we have to pay the remaining on that. And then the police department has currently very old tasers that are outdated and unserviceable at this point. So we're requesting to purchase new tasers at $70,000. For our CIP update, We have our Morrow Dunes. These are projects that are currently already in the budget. We're just going to give you an update on their status. Our Morrow Creek Restoration Project at $66,000. This is partially a grant-funded capital project, and we're engaged with the Coastal Commission right now to determine the level of needs and repairs that they will approve or require us to have out there. Our bocce ball court, as you heard earlier in the evening, we have a groundbreaking on Saturday this weekend. It's about $30,000, and we've collaborated really well with community volunteers to get that project complete. Our new pipeline along Kern and Anchor Streets, that's a storm drain project. That work has not yet started yet. Facility audiovisual upgrades, still partnering with AGP to determine the purchases that will be necessary to complete that project. We currently have $150,000 almost budgeted for the project and have some additional funds identified when we get an overall rehab plan in place. Our city park playground structure is $150,000. That work has not started yet. Our Cloisters Park landscape assessment, we had $16,000 in the budget. This project is complete. This was for the design portion of the project. What we discussed earlier for $50,000 is that next phase one of implementation of the design. And then our North Point parking lot improvement, we had $61,000 in the budget. We received bids. They were significantly higher than the engineering estimate. And in addition to that, we are determining the actual availability of funding. Realized that there are two assessment districts that were combined in one fund, so we're going back to sort out how much money belongs to each assessment district. So we'll have revisions to that project that we'll bring back in coming council meetings. Our general government capital improvement projects, our Tideland Stormwater Park Pocket Park, $47,000. Also, bids came in higher than expected, so we're reevaluating and re-scoping the project at this point. Our state Route 1 41 interchange improvements, still in the preliminary engineering and environmental phase. And then our pavement management plan, $760,000. We have a new contract with PEI for revisions to the plan. We discussed a little bit of the needs during our 10-year forecast for the city, so we'll be moving forward with this year's pavement in the coming months. And for our water and sewer capital projects, again, these are the budgeted projects. Our one water system improvement for Nutmeg pressure zones, we had $382,000 budgeted. An RFP was issued for that work. The bid deadline was February 20th. That was the date that this packet was produced and distributed. So we didn't know how many proposals we could say at that point, but we did receive two proposals in response to that. So we'll be evaluating those. The wastewater collections, Main Street and Atascadero Road, for $171,000 budgeted. The RFP was issued and bids were received. We received three bids in response to that, and we'll be coming back to council in March for award of contract. And the same for the wastewater collections at Beachcomber. Three responses, and we'll be coming back to council in March with a request for contract. Our transit and trolley projects, our replacement vehicle bus, this project's completed. The vehicle was delivered in September and placed into service in November. Our transit stop signage and information display cases, this was a grant-funded project. We did not receive the grant, so we'll evaluate potential other funding sources to complete that. The replacement trolley that has been delivered in January, certified by CHP, and will be in service in February this month. And then we have a second trolley that we'll start the procurement process for as well. Our harbor capital projects, beach street slips, we have $370,000 budgeted. They're currently working on the design and engineering and permitting for that. There was $42,000 budgeted for our South T Pier renovations. This would augment the proposal for the Castlewind Community Benefit money. There's significant and extensive rehabilitation that needs to be done, and this was minimal repairs, kind of patchwork, if you will. Similarly, for the North T Pier, we had $10,000 budgeted. And again, that would augment the $50,000 of the community benefit money for more extensive rehabilitation that's needed. And then $10,000 for the Harbor Ice Machine if needed. Lastly, for Harbor, we had a grant-funded project in there for the Department of Boating and Waterways. Had disagreements on the scope and the cost for that project with making sure we include our ADA access and those types of things. So we're proposing to defund that project that currently exists, and then we'll be adding the new project to evaluate a new scope and make sure we have all the components of that in there before submitting a new application to DBW. So for our new CIPs, security improvements at city facilities, again, that's public works, community development, recreation, our active adult center in Harbor. Total project cost is $52,000, $37,000 from our impact fees and $15,000 from our Harbor Accumulation Fund. The electric vehicle charging station, $22,000 from our parking and lieu fees. And then our Cloisters landscape project with $50,000 from our accumulation fund for the Cloisters Assessment District. The boat launch facility rehabilitation down at the Harbor Department, we're going to propose to use $60,000 from the accumulation fund. Again, that's to determine the scope, concept, and cost for a new project that then we could apply for a new grant from DBW for. And then lastly, Council will remember that in November of 18, we received $250,000 from Castle Wind for community benefit money. That money has been set aside in a separate fund until we had identified appropriate projects to use that money for. At this point, we have done so. We have a separate resolution for Council to consider, Resolution 2020. That would appropriate all of the community benefit money up to $250,000 for much-needed rehabilitation of the South T and North T piers down on our Embarcadero. The South T Pier is in need of rebuilding and replacing pilings and cross members, replacing decking and fire and utility system rehabilitations, and fender pile replacements. And that would be up to $200,000 from that fund we would be asking to appropriate. And then the remaining $50,000 are up to that amount for our North T Pier renovations, primarily for utility and fire sprinkler rehabilitation. So with that, all of our department directors are here. You can certainly ask any questions on any of the proposed recommended adjustments or any of the projects that we have outlined in the report.
Thank you, Jen, for another comprehensive report. And I'll open it up for council questions first. Any questions specifically? Yes.
I do.
Okay. Councilmember McPherson.
All right. Thank you. First of all, I just wanted to mention that I attended the meeting of the Citizens Finance Advisory Committee when they actually reviewed this. And if you haven't looked in your packet, there are 9 pages of questions that they submitted to Jen ahead of time, and she responded to. And so many of the questions that I initially had were, in fact, already asked and answered. So, and they are for the community's benefit as well, if you look in the agenda packet. So I just have a couple in addition to that. Could you explain what the security improvements are planned at the 3 city facilities?
Rob can probably go into more detail, but ultimately kind of look like what we have at City Hall, where you have wall with windows, allow for ADA access and accessibility in terms of what type of service is being provided at City Hall. It's a lot of payment transfers one way or another, information sharing, questions and answers, that kind of thing. But the community development public works building, there's submittal of plans and review, so it'll look a little bit different. So we want to certainly allow for the flexibility, but ultimately it's going to look similar to City Hall at the rec division upstairs, downstairs with the senior center or active adults area, and down at the Harbor office. So again, it's sort of what it looks like at City Hall would be sort of what it would resemble everywhere else. That includes
cameras and other things like locked doors.
So there would be an actual wall with just a window that people would approach?
Yeah, just like we have at the fire department, just like we have at the police department, and what we have at City Hall. And there obviously be opportunities if it's a prolonged conversation to, you know, have...
Invite people in.
Yeah, because we already have that already at the Public Works Division Department and continue planning where they use a side room for longer, more detailed review of plans. So that will still be a service provided.
Okay. And I know if you look at the budget projections that you have, I just noted that a couple of them seemed low. They were lower than the projections for the last fiscal year. And I asked you this question, but I think it would help the public to understand how you come up with these revenue projections. And if you would just describe the process so that people understand why it might go down in a single year as opposed to you would think they would go up naturally.
Sure. So maybe we can do our three big revenue sources, property tax, sales tax, and TOT. Our property tax estimates we get right from the county, and we use the estimates that they provide us for their property tax. Our sales tax estimates we receive from our consultant, HDL, and we use those estimates. They base their projections on not only how, you know, this county's doing, but what they see across the state. And we have conversations with them on if there's new businesses coming into town or something like that. So they have enough detail that we rely on their estimates. For our TOT estimates, we prepare the budget in March, April timeframe. We look at the TOT that's been received through March, April, depending on usually March, and then I go back and revisit it in April before we publish what percentage of TOT was received that year versus the same period in the prior year, and then extrapolate that out based on the same ratios. So it's not necessarily surprising that the numbers that you see here are year-end actuals for 18-19. We did better than we had projected, and that could have been because of Amgen that happened in May. But we don't have the full fiscal year to make those estimates off
of. Right. So when you're making the estimates, you just don't have enough information, and you base it on what you have at the time.
Correct.
Right. Okay. And then we did talk a little bit about the property tax and why it's so much lower in the second quarter this year compared to previous years. And I don't know if you've had an opportunity to find out why, or you have any kind of guesstimate about why or what some of the reasons might be for that?
No, I'm going to reach out to the county and see if we can figure out. Sometimes there's just lagging payments. That's not all that uncommon. So we'll reach out to the county and see what's going on, and then if there's anything to report back, we'll do that.
Okay. That's all my questions. Thanks.
Great. Councilmember Heller, I think I saw a finger in her hand up.
I have a few questions.
Sure.
You know, in going through this, obviously it's very well detailed and developed, but I keep thinking back to the meeting that came before this one about our fiscal condition and structural deficit, et cetera. So I'm looking at these things and thinking, well, first of all, do we need a new trolley? I mean, we got a new trolley last year. Do we need another new one at $400,000? I mean, where is have you vetted all this stuff and made attempts to reduce the expenditures that are reflected here?
So we have to keep in mind the funding sources for the purchases.
Okay.
The discussion we had earlier is our general fund, and that's what provides the public services like police, fire, you know, the administration component.
Right.
And those are the there's offsetting revenues for all of the adjustments that we've proposed. So that's the first two pages of the presentation, $153,000 in revenues and $152,000 in expenditures. So we're not adding to the base budget, if you will. We're
okay.
Offsetting those. When you look at the trolley, we receive LTF money. It's a separate funding source. We can only use it for transportation-related purposes. So there's no impact to the general fund going forward. And similarly to all of the security improvements, we recommended those coming from another source that wouldn't impact the general fund. Those are our impact fees that we collect for our facilities. If we don't use those within a certain time period, you have to give them back, or you have to demonstrate that you have uses for them. So we were in the vetting of all of these. We were very cognizant of how it would impact the general fund and look to identify other funding sources to pay for
this. Okay, thank you for that clarification. I appreciate it. The one water projects, there are three of them listed here. The bids have been received. Did the bids match the engineer's estimates or exceed, or where do we stand with those bids? I'm not asking for specific numbers. I'm just wondering in general how they came in.
So on the wastewater project, we received three proposals. As you probably know, you don't bid for professional engineering services. You request a proposal, get a scope, and negotiate a fee. Those fees that came in were within the ranges that we estimated for the project. So
these are the three one water projects?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. That's all I have.
Okay. Great. Councilmember Davis, questions?
Yes, thank you. Rob, I did note that there were a few instances when we either did not receive bids for projects or the bids exceeded the engineer's estimates. Are we looking into why that happens?
So the engineer's estimates were based on the consultants that prepared those plans based on their database of projects that had bid recently. Construction projects generally go up in price over time. And it depends on the market and how much work there is out there. These are fairly small projects that we're looking to do. For example, the Tidelands Park had a lot of trades that we were looking to do that work. Not a very large space, not a very large budget. So when we rebidding this project, we looked at the trade that is most difficult for us to do, the concrete flat work. We can do the demolition and rough grading fairly easily, so the flat work seems like that would be the way to bid that out. I think it's the nature of these small jobs that maybe the engineers' databases don't reflect the prices on such small quantities of work. Bocce ball, we just couldn't find an interested contractor for that small of a job based on the funding that we had available for the project.
Okay, and that's was the same at North Point.
North Point, it's a couple of issues there. There's really only a limited number of contractors that can do the luminaire type work. So there's kind of a market, small market for that. The fence work was just unreasonably high to do. We could do that much cheaper in-house. The other issue is because of the two assessment districts being combined into one fund over the years, We really need to determine how much funding is available before we award a contract and spend another assessment district's funds and have to pay that back. So we're doing some what I call forensic accounting. I don't know if that's the right word, but that's my sure. word that I used to determine how much are in each of the storm drain assessment district number one versus the North Point assessment district.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Addis.
I just have one about the the safety construction at City Hall, and I know there was some public comment around feeling like it wasn't going to be a welcoming space anymore, and now that construction has happened, I was wondering if we're still getting that feedback and if there's been any kind of change in service given the new construction there.
I would say we still have people come in that maybe haven't been in since it's happened and are like, oh, this is different. Overall, we haven't heard negative feedback in a long time. Initially, there was a little, our staff, the staff that works up there is under finance. They feel they're very appreciative of it, feel very safe and secure, much more so than before. And I think when people ask about it, the explanation of it, including the ADA access, which we did not have before, and they can see it's very, you know, obvious now that we have the window that is it more accessible, and an overall better workflow of space, I don't hear any negativity at this point.
Thank you.
Great. Janet, just a couple questions. Page 101 of the staff report. Looking at property tax revenue history, each year we've been above 50% at this time. We're now at about 44.2. Is that a timing issue specifically?
I believe there's probably some lagging payments that haven't come in, but that's what I'm going to reach out to the county for and have a conversation right with them.
Okay, just wanted to, but for the public's benefit, to note that. And then page 106, the $89,000 budget revision with regard to salaries and benefits, is that primarily due to the mutual aid issue?
Yes, mutual aid and our cost to do the fire inspections.
Okay, so we don't expect to be over at the end of the year, it looks like.
Correct.
Okay, and then page 111. Let me get there. Line item overtime would jump out at any community member that, you know, we're 144% year to date, which is midway through the year. Again, my assumption is that's mutual aid related, and if that's true, could you just validate that for me?
That is true. There is some overtime included, primarily mutual aid. There's also some overtime that was occurred in the police department. There's offsetting salary savings from that when the employees leave and a transition of getting a new employee on board. Overtime's used, so there's a net savings that results from that.
Okay, and then page 124. My get there. That's the Measure Q revenues. Looking at least back to 15-16, we're pretty significantly above where we are now. But last year we were at about 25%. Is the year-to-date forecasted number going to be that much less than last fiscal year's $1.226 million?
We, like I mentioned, we just met with our consultant this afternoon. He did provide a new budget estimate for Measure Q. Our general fund sales tax were within $8,000 of their estimate. I believe he increased this to $1,111,000, so a little bit higher.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. With that, I will open up public comment, item C1. Any members of the public wishing to come forward with regard to item C1, please do so now. Seeing none, I will bring it back to council for a motion and then discussion. How's that?
Okay. I would move staff recommendation.
All four?
All of them, yes.
All four. I will second that.
Motion by Councilmember Davis for staff recommendation A, B, C, D. Second by Councilmember McPherson. And I'll open it up for discussion.
I just want to thank the staff for making the recommendation on using the Castle Wind Community Benefit Funds to provide much-needed improvements to the harbor. This is something that the Harbor Board has talked about and wanted, and as their liaison, I will be so thrilled to be able to go back and tell them that it's done. So I just wanted to say that.
Great, thank you. Other, yes.
Yes, I want to say thank you for scheduling the resurfacing of the pickleball courts. That is a very active and popular recreational activity, and it is a moneymaker. Everybody who plays pickleball pays $1 per session, and that's the money that we are going to use to resurface the courts. And thank you, Rob, for overseeing the project and getting it done.
Great. Thank you.
Councilmember, yes, Addis, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to express my gratitude as well, and seeing all of the capital improvement updates as well as the new capital projects, I feel like we're doing well with what we have to work with, and I want to appreciate staff for that and the community that has helped, and my colleagues on council for supporting moving forward with these things that I think are really going to benefit the community of Morro Bay in general.
Good, and I'll add my thanks to CFAC, and Councilmember McPherson echoed that, their extensive, as usual, overview. I very much appreciate that and all the work that they do. Thanks to staff for your thoughtful recommendations on reallocations of funds and this report. I also want to note that it appears like we're going to be on track for the end of the year to once again hopefully exceed our budget expectations, and that's good at the halfway point. So with that, I'll call roll call vote.
Councilmember Davis.
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson.
Yes.
Councilmember Addis.
Yes.
Councilmember Heller.
Yes.
And Mayor Hedding.
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
That brings us to item number C-2, Morro Bay Visitor Center location and operational plan update and recommendations. And I will turn it over to our esteemed city manager, Mr. Collins.
Thank you, Mayor, council members. Looks like Dane is going to switch the PowerPoint. So just a recap before we jump into the PowerPoint. We were here last month talking about a potential opportunity to relocate the visitor center from its current location at Harbor Street down to the Embarcadero, 575 Embarcadero. That opportunity arose with quick thinking on the part of TBID and tourism staff to attempt to have the California Welcome Center moved to Morro Bay, and finding an optimal location and co-locating the current visitor center with that offering for all residents and visitors who pass through Morro Bay. Unfortunately, the decision was made by SoCal Board to select Pismo Beach as the location for the California Welcome Center. However, it did kind of spark the interest of, well, maybe we should move anyhow. SoCal was going to inject $90,000 a year into the operations for the California Welcome Center, which would have helpful benefits to the visitor center, but that is not to be. So City Council directed staff to work with the TBID and Chamber on bringing back a proposal and budget for consideration at this council meeting. So the Chamber did take that specific direction and look at a proposal for 575 Embarcadero. They weren't asked to do anything beyond that, but just say what would it take to bring the visitor center down to the new location, and they did indeed provide a good, solid proposal to us, which we shared with the TBID advisory board last week, and they provided recommendations, which we'll get into now. So here again is the mock-up of what it would look like if we moved to 575 Embarcadero, which you saw last time we discussed this. This is the behind, a good look at the rock. This is, again, showing you the docking space, but behind the facility, which would include a ADA-accessible public restroom. This is a floor plan. Again, proximity to the visitor-serving amenities of Morro Bay. So I discussed where the origins of the chamber proposal came from, and it's very important to emphasize the chamber was asked to do one specific thing only, not to research the issue in detail so much as submit a proposal. I think we all agree, at least the TBID did, and folks who are working in the industry, that the current visitor center is simply not ideal. The chamber does an excellent job within the confines that they're working with providing that service, but the location is less than ideal, and we believe not matching with where we're trying to take our community in terms of a visitor-serving location. So they did submit that proposal, was vetted by TBID. The goals of that proposal is to significantly improve the visitor center experience for our users. Significantly increase the number of visitors who use the visitor center. It's currently down to about 8,000 per year. Back in its heyday in other locations, it was in the 15 to 25,000 visitors annually. We want to connect visitors to Morro Bay's lodging, retail, restaurants, other amenities, free and paying, and that's an important service. That means hotel revenues, vacation rental revenues as they're part of TBID, other business revenues, as well as increased revenues to the city. The terms are, again, outlined in the attached proposal, which hopefully you've had time to review. I'm not going to go into great detail, but they do project, you know, the $30,000 to $50,000 range for outfitting the building and startup costs, projecting over a five-year period a 3.25% COLA over each year over year, an increase in the management fee that they're currently paid for managing the visitor center up on Harbor Street, proposing an on-site manager almost full-time who would be supported with part-time help during the peak seasons. They'd be open 362 days a year, and the peak seasons from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. ADA restroom offered with, they propose having somebody contracting out a cleaning service for that to keep it, you know, sparkling. Off-street parking at the Shell Shop, at least verbally, have been told that that would be free to the city for two spaces. That we create an advisory committee of city staff, TBID folks, and chamber representatives to create a tighter knit review of the functionings of the vacations or visitor center and make improvements and enhancements as needed. So the current visitor center budget is $50,000 a year. It's at a city facility, so we don't pay rent. So that's an important consideration when we think about the budget. And looking at the proposed budget from the chamber, remaining fiscal year 19-20, we would be looking at $101,000 total budget. That includes the $50,000 that covers us for the existing center, and then the upstart or onboarding costs, if you will, for getting the new one up and running, which would be picked up by TBID, at least in the proposal. Of course, council has complete discretion on that. For fiscal year 2021, we'd be looking at $116,000 per year, and then you see the COLA is taking effect in out years all the way up to $128,500 in fiscal year 23-24, projecting that the general fund would follow COLA increases and that TBID would pick up the remainder costs differential. I'll come back to council questions. The TBID recommendations to council, so they reviewed the proposal, had really good discussion, ranging from is this the appropriate location to what's the visitor center best practices to should the TBID be paying for any of this, and if so, how much. It covered the gamut of that. I think they wanted more information, especially as a proposal projected them picking up a significant portion of the tab, that there's a return on investment for their clients. In essence, the TBID represents hotels and vacation rentals, so they want to make sure that the allocation is proportional to the benefit, and understanding what that benefit is across the board. So a lot of really good questions, good dialogue with in public comment with Chamber Representative Eric Crawford and myself, just talking about this is an issue that's been ongoing. We know the current location is not ideal. We've studied it before. Here's real opportunity and significant opportunity to up our game. But the cost is what it is. It's a big number, a big jump, and TBID rightfully has concerns about the proportionality of funding. So they requested that council requested the chamber to conduct a study. Certainly doesn't have to be the chamber, but a focus on a short term. Like, we don't want to spend 6 months to a year studying this issue, but really hone in on the proportionality, understanding how the tourist industry would benefit in terms of performance metrics from a visitor center being funded by TBID, and also looking at a small sampling of other cities of our size or approximate size and how they conduct themselves with regard to visitor centers, and certainly considering alternatives that a lot of people are moving to their phones and apps to acquaint themselves with new locations. So back to the questions for council, and they could take these in any order, and of course I'm sure you have other considerations, but the ones that we thought of were, you know, should the city relocate to the 575 Embarcadero, locate our visitor center, and should the TBID contribute funds that they go above the $50,000 amount that the city kicks in, and if so, what proportion would be appropriate for TBID? Does council propose alternatives to the 575 Embarcadero or the chamber proposal or even methods by which visitor center services are provided? Does council support a short-term study for a visitor center as recommended by the TBID? Does council want to modify the proposed study? You know, it's in there what they've suggested as a TBID advisory board, but it's certainly council's determination to decide what depth you want to go in for how long, and ultimately, if the study has costs associated, how would they be funded, or how would it be funded? So that's what we teed up for you. Certainly can answer as many questions as you have. I know several of you have reached out to discuss this with me, and you know, I think what we're ultimately aiming for is to have a shorter period of analysis, because we're going to be coming up to the contract for next year at the current location, and seemingly another year of only 8,000 visitors stepping in is not adequate for what we're trying to do for our tourist community and destination. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Scott, for that. I do notice the staff recommendation is to the TBID Advisory Board recommends the City Council to request the Chamber to conduct a study to include those four items, and you have that as the staff recommendation.
That is this taking TBID recommendations
straight off,
putting it in there.
Got it.
Staff is agnostic to that. It's just we wanted to make sure we brought forward what was a real recommendation. Of course, the alternative could be just to proceed forward with the 575 or certain other alternatives.
Okay, great. Yeah, I will open it up for council questions. None to my left.
I have questions.
Councilmember McPherson, go ahead and start us off.
Well, some of these may be for Erica, and she was kind enough to meet with me today, but yeah, if you don't mind.
Coming to the mic is Erica Crawford, CEO of the Chamber.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you, Erica, and thank you for meeting with me. It was very helpful.
Sure.
I did ask you the question about the number of visitors we may have had at previous locations, and I don't know if you've been able to find anything about that, but we've moved around a lot, and so I don't think we have really good data on what it's been or what it might be in an alternative location or what it's been in the past at alternative locations, so we're kind of in the dark on that. Would you sort of agree?
I would agree.
Okay, thank you. So we've known for a long time that this is not a good location. But I know that about a year ago, and you reminded me about this, you conducted quite a bit of research and community outreach on alternatives, because the question was, is there a better model for visitor services as opposed to a site that people go to? Could you just refresh the memory for folks here of what you learned from that and what some of those alternatives were, and did you ever implement any of them yet?
Put me on the spot. Yes, so I don't know. It wasn't extensive outreach.
Okay.
I think it was more, it came from a place of the visitor center has been jostled around town quite a few different places, and our staff has been in multiple of those locations. So anecdotally, we do have, you know,
okay,
that this is the slower location. So what we decided to kind of do is, because we were required to initiate a letter to the city saying we're interested in renewing our contract for a year. And right around February, I thought, are we doing the very best we can do? You know, our traffic was going down. So we convened a little group of chamber members to say, are we doing the best we can do? And they said, you guys are doing fine. You know, they kind of said, the whole city's a visitor center. You know, I'd put a kiosk up in my wall, you know, or this kind of thing, but you guys are doing just fine. Here are some recommended, you know, make a map or give us some things. If you could empower us to do our job better as an ambassador to the city, you know, we'd be interested in that. It was just a small group, maybe six or seven. And then about a month later, I said, okay. And we got the Harbor Planning Commission, the TBID Council and staff members from each of those departments and then two of each of their advisory boards just around a table to have a conversation about the ideal state of the visitor center. So it was about 14 people we met at the Inn at Morro Bay, and we just had a broad ranging, I facilitated the meeting, and what came out of it were thoughts that brick and mortar, we kind of shared our ideal. Councilmember Heller, you were there. Councilmember Davis also. Scott, do you remember this? And Scott Collins is there. We did like an ideal state of a brick and mortar visitor center, an ideal state of just a kiosk, and then there was a meshing of a kiosk and brick and mortar hybrid model. So we said, okay, let's meet again, invited everybody back to explore the kiosk model. We had a far smaller group, and we didn't get very far. But we started to talk about the concept of visitor engagement and what is the proper metric of success for a visitor center. Is it just traffic, or is it about what we're empowering people to do, you know, with their energy and enthusiasm of being in a new place, or are they, you know, experience of being in a new place? So what City Manager Scott and I did was when we went to renew the contract for this year, we kind of adopted a little bit of that spirit of getting a street team out, going to the businesses to empower them with like trolley maps or our public restroom and public parking maps to give them the ability to be a better ambassador, a more effective, you know, if the whole city's a visitor center, and we love tourists and they're the cornerstone of our economy, how are we empowering our employees and all the different businesses to be able to provide that service also, in addition to having sort of our home base at 695 Harbor. So that's where we're at right now.
So did you have any feedback on how that worked?
We had, yeah, I mean, businesses were pleased. We had an intern. We re-signed that contract July 1, and I had a sweet high school student called Max Morrison. Hello, Max, if you're watching. Very, very great kid. But he came in, and he went out door-to-door, and he delivered posters for upcoming events. He delivered public restroom and public parking maps, trolley maps, and kind of kept, like, a log of all the different businesses that he was going to and just kind of being available to people. And he'd come back smiling and bounding, and, you know, it was great for him. But we didn't go all in and do, like, a uniform and have somebody out, you know, by the sea otters, which was, you know, something that we are happy to do for this year.
And you didn't test the kiosk idea either then, really?
But that was not in the contract.
Okay, it was not. So you haven't tested that as an idea, an alternative to have several places on the Embarcadero where there people can get information about?
We did not. We didn't go down that path.
Okay. And do you know anything about how the visitor centers operate in other cities in Slo County?
Sure. I don't know, you know, traffic numbers.
Right.
Aside from, I know Slo County has, or San Luis Obispo City has quite a robust number. I think 80,000 a year or something. It's a lot. But that's run by the San Luis Obispo Chamber. Paso Robles Chamber runs there. Visitor Center, South County Chamber is now going to run the California Welcome Center. I think they run the Arroyo Grande Village Center. I think it's not uncommon from the WACE. It's not uncommon. It's kind of our bread and butter as chambers of commerce to run visitor centers or to have visitor bureaus.
Right. So, but we could quite easily get information about how they're funded and how where the money comes, the revenue, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think the chamber has the capacity to conduct the study that the TBID has recommended?
It's not currently in my workflow, so I don't have the authority to self-direct. You know, I have you guys. I have 12 bosses. So I have a board of directors. I'll meet with them on the 17th, and we'll be bringing back feedback.
Because I noticed they're recommending that you conduct it, but is that appropriate, or would it be more appropriate for the city to conduct it? Our contract is with you, correct?
We have is to provide the service of running a visitor center within certain parameters that are all in the contract. This work is not in that contract.
Okay. And how soon do you think we would need to make some decision about how we're going to do it next year, leaving aside the issue of where we put it, but just do we want to continue a contract for a brick-and-mortar visitor center somewhere?
I think you're having the right conversation at the right time.
Okay, so we don't have a lot of time.
Mm-mm.
We couldn't do a big study.
Yeah. Nor do I think, I mean, Yeah, I think you, the more specific you are in the scope and what you want to see, what kind of data you want, I think the you don't need to draw this out for months.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Erica.
Okay.
Sure. Great, thank you. Councilmember Heller, any questions? Okay. Erica, don't sit down. My turn. or please do not sit down, I should say. Thank you.
Okay.
Of the 8,000 or so visits, do you know or can you tell me roughly what people come looking for?
I can. I have data right in front of me. I'm
I
glad
figured that.
See, I went back to the chair. In 2018 and 2019, the top three services that visitors were seeking were directions and maps, events, you know, what's going on in town, what's happening, and free activities. How do I get to the Rock? You know, where can I go have a picnic?
Those were the top three.
Those
How about
top three.
Lodging, restaurants, retail?
Lodging for 18 and 19, people looking for a place to stay in a hotel, 3%. Looking for a camping or an RV opportunity, 2%. And vacation rentals, about 1%.
And I'm sorry, what was the first one? Retail? Or
no, those were lodging. Oh, sorry. And then, okay, so restaurants.
Restaurant was?
For dining. 6 and 7%. Retail, 4 and 5%.
Okay. So for hotel recommendations, literally just 3%
mm-hmm.
were looking for that. Do you have age demographics?
I don't.
Okay. Mm-mm. Do you have a sense of the age of individuals that come in mostly? And I know that would be anecdotal at best, but I mean, are we talking about the millennials that are coming in without their cell phones
it's
and
all,
apps?
I'm not going to lie. It's all kinds. All
over.
I'm thinking about a very sweet, you know, like 22-year-old French kids who came in like shorts and short sleeve shirts. You know, where's the beach? Where's the sun? You know,
yeah.
We see all kinds.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of international tourists who don't have international phone plans and things like that. And then just, you know, people who are, whoa, what's going on in here? What can you tell me? What's the inside scoop, you know? And I'm telling you, our staff takes great pride in when people come back to them and thank you so much, Ed, for that recommendation. That was, you know, I mean, he'll send me pictures, selfies with visitors, you know, on
That's
Sundays.
Great. That's great. Okay. And then of those that do come and seek services from you, is there a particular day of the week and or when there's major concentration, and it's probably weekends, but how much of it goes on Monday through Friday versus Saturday, Sunday?
Midweek slumps. Sundays can be slumpy, depending on if there's a holiday on Monday. But I'd say it's probably Thursday, Friday, Saturday that see the highest numbers.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
That's all I have.
Okay.
Great. With that, I'll open up public comment for item C2. Any member of the public wishing to come forward now on item C2, please do so. I do have one speaker, Mimi Goldberg. Mimi, welcome.
Good evening, City Council. My name is Mimi Goldberg, and this is Bruno Blackpaws Goldberg. Regarding the visitor center, I feel that it should be closer to the Rock, because Jennifer has already told us that a number of the tourists that come to San Luis Obispo County, they all come to see the Rock. They don't go down towards the launch ramp too much. And I feel that also the city probably owns some property at the bottom of one of those hills that the tourists come down and they're going towards the Rock. Or when they're redoing Coleman Park, you know, the building that the Maritime Museum is in, something like that would be really nice. I think it should be something that's educational and fun, a fun way to learn about the free things also that there are to do in Morro Bay that Morro Bay offers and also educate the public, because there are a lot of cool free things to do, like going on the other side of the Rock, west of the Rock, on that nice little beach at low tide. There's tide pools there. Or renting a kayak and going to the sand spit That's why I look so disheveled today, because I was on the sand spit today. It was so nice. Or just hanging your head over a floating dock and looking at the eelgrass and looking for a sea slug off of some kelp. I mean, there's a lot of really neat stuff, but I don't want to see you guys move it from one place and then have to move it again. It should go into a permanent place for a long time, and it would be a real neat thing. It would be an asset to inform the public and tourists about all the neat things that Morro Bay has to offer. All right. Thanks, you guys. And Eric, I want to say thank you so much for helping with the otter, the pup, and the mom today. That was really cool. All right.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Mimi.
You guys.
The public comment is still open for item C-2. Anybody wishing to come forward, please do so now. Welcome. Been waiting a long time.
Well, no, yeah, I was going to talk about the pickleball thing, but that went real
that
fine.
that,
no problem. My name's Rich Robb. Thank you guys for all you do. Sitting here, it's just amazing to see what you do. My comment is about the visitor center, which is what you're talking about. Don't we own the PG&E plant, the former PG&E plant? Because I think that little visitor center that they have out in front would be ideal location for a new Chamber of Commerce location, because it's towards the rock, it's on the Embarcadero, and I thought we already owned it, but maybe we don't. But is that a possibility? Because it's, to me, that's the perfect place. Everybody goes to see the rock, and then you can go from there, and it would facilitate. There's a little parking lot, make it a little bigger. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Rich. Public comment still open for item C-2. Any members of the public wishing to come forward, please do so now. Bless you. Looking around, seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it back for discussion and recommendation. Councilmember Davis.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I met with Erica, and Erica gave me a lot of good information, and I thank you for that. I'm concerned, first of all, that we have a major structural deficit in next year's projected income and expenses, and I want to look closely at where we are spending our money. Visitors are important to Morro Bay. TOT and sales tax are about half of our revenue, and visitors pay about 70% of our sales tax and all of our TOT. So I need to see how our visitor center, on which we are currently spending $50,000 a year, fits into producing that income. I'm looking for a return on investment. What do we get for the dollars that we're investing in the visitor center? And so thanks to Erica and to our great visitor center staff for keeping the numbers. They log the questions that every visitor asks. And here's what they say. 46% of our visitors ask about events and activities. 20% ask for maps and directions. 10% ask about retail and dining, and 6% ask about lodging, camping, and short-term rentals. I think a big part of our visitor experience is infrastructure. I'm concerned that we spend a lot of money to promote visitation, but I'm not sure that we fulfill the promise when people actually get here. And the primary thing that comes to mind are the restrooms and trash. Mr. Collins brought to us a partial solution for that at our last meeting. That's a big help. But I would like to do more in those areas, and also streets, sidewalks, general cleanliness, and appearance. So the question for me is, are there other ways to provide the services that people are looking for in the visitor center, which are primarily events, activities, maps, and directions? And if we don't spend $50,000 a year on a visitor center, what could we do with that money to enhance the visitor experience? And is that a better way to spend our dollars? So I would like to ask staff to explore other options to provide the most requested visitor services and consider letting our current contract expire at the end of June.
Is that a motion? Or you just want to have... You can make a motion. It sounded like a motion to me.
Well, all right.
I mean...
Okay, that is my motion.
Want to repeat it?
Yes. Thank you. I would like to ask staff to explore other options to provide the most requested visitor services and consider letting our current contract expire at the end of June.
Second.
Motion by Council Member Davis to ask staff to explore other options for visitor center services and allow the existing contract to expire. Seconded by Council Member Heller. Did I get that right? Your motion? Okay. And I just want to clarify, I didn't hear a timeline. Allow it to expire, but you want them to explore. Is it by next week or next year? Or do you have a thought? And I don't want to...
Yeah, the recommendation from staff would have to come before, was it April 30th? Is that the date for renewal?
We usually do the renewal discussion with council during the budget, so usually in May is when you would be reviewing the contract with the chamber.
But don't you have to let the chamber know in advance?
Well, we don't get to decide what council does, so we can tell them when it's going to go to council, but the decision is with the five of you. So,
okay.
That's living by a one-year contract kind of puts you in that position.
Okay, so yeah. I guess the timeline would be in May during the budget discussion.
Is that acceptable to you, Councilmember Heller, for timeline? Okay. So we do have a motion and a second. I'll open it up for discussion.
Can I clarify? Are
Absolutely.
You asking for recommendations to come back, or is the motion to not renew the contract? I thought I heard two things in there, and I just want to know very clearly if I'm voting to bring recommendations forward or if I'm voting to end a contract, because I don't want to end the contract. But I'm open to bringing recommendations forward and to having a discussion about other options, but I think it's premature to just say we're going to wholesale end a contract with when we don't even know what the other recommendations are.
Let me ask the clerk to repeat your motion? That would be acceptable? Yeah, just so we hear what you said. Thank you.
Councilmember Davis moved to ask staff to explore other options to provide the most requested visitor services and consider letting the current contract expire the end of June. And then he added to have that recommendation come back during the budget sessions in May.
So is a yes vote mean we would let go of the contract?
The actual word was consider letting the current contract expire, which is a little nebulous. I think you're maybe saying it's a little nebulous?
I feel like it's too nebulous because I don't want to mistakenly vote to end a contract that I'm not ready to end.
Mr. Mayor, if I could,
sure.
For purposes of efficiency, it might be easier to split it into two motions. One, having directing staff to bring back the further information that Councilmember Davis is requesting, and then two, have staff consider, based upon that, what the steps would be to not renew the contract. Given that the current contract is to run for another 5 months or so, whether or not we renewed it is not really... It's not really a decision to make tonight anyways, but certainly council could ask staff to come back with, what that means, like how we would wind down the operations, et cetera, if council wanted to not renew it five
thank
months
you.
From now.
Yes, thank you, Chris. Would that be acceptable?
Let me withdraw that motion and make a...
Hold on. If you want to withdraw,
motion?
You want to withdraw the second? Okay, so motion's off the table. Go ahead.
Sure. I'd like to ask staff to explore other options to provide the most requested visitor services And then a second motion would be...
Is there a date with that? Did you
By
a date certain?
Yes. During the May budget review.
Second.
Okay.
Could we vote up to discuss that and vote on that one
yes,
first?
Yes, we will.
Please?
Yes, so we're going to do that. So motion by Council Member Davis to ask staff to explore other options for visitor center services and bring back by the May budget presentation, seconded by Council Member Heller. I'll open it up.
Does that include a study of the Embarcadero location, those other options? Does that include a study of the Embarcadero location as suggested here, or are those other options? Are you saying you don't want to look at the Embarcadero location?
Yeah, I guess my real question is, do we need to have a visitor center at all? So I'm trying to arrive at a way to make that a decision point.
Councilmember McPherson.
Yeah, let me just say, first of all, I am not comfortable moving ahead with the proposal, which I think is much too expensive and commits us to much too long a time frame. I do think we need more information before we can move forward. I agree with that, and I think that the idea of exploring a study, not an expensive study, I think we could get that done fairly quickly, especially if we had... some volunteers and an ad hoc committee, but I would recommend that staff conduct it, and that we look at a few similar sized cities and cities within the county, really to find out, do they have the centers? How are they funded? Do they use other options? So we could list the questions that we want answered, and we should be able to do the study fairly quickly and not with a lot of resources. I wouldn't want to spend a lot of money on it, but then come back and make a decision about how we move forward. And it may be, you know, we may miss 575 Embarcadero in the meantime if they rent it, but there are other places where if we decide that a permanent visitor center is what we need, I'm sure we could find one. But I would still like to explore the kiosk idea and other ideas. And so I think if we can at least get some sense of best practices and how other people handle this, we'd be in a better place to make a more permanent decision. So
my sense is Councilmember McPherson does not support the motion. Councilmember Addis does not support the motion. I do not support the motion, only because I think it lacks specificity. So I'll call for the vote on this motion and then see where it lands.
Yes.
Comment?
Quickly, the staff work plan is full through May. I mean, full. Overloaded full. So Councilmember McPherson's suggestion of volunteer support for this will be absolutely a necessity because I'm still running the Vacation Rental Committee, which we didn't use a consultant for that service so that staff could do that to save money. I don't have any resources available.
Thank you,
not to make excuses, but if we want to do this quickly, we absolutely will need volunteer support for that.
Totally understood.
I appreciate that.
I'll call the question.
Councilmember Davis.
Well, I'm going to vote no. Because I agree,
okay.
I agree with the mayor that the motion lacks specificity.
I was trying to be kind.
Councilmember Heller.
I really like the motion. You got a yes.
Okay.
Councilmember Addis.
No.
Councilmember McPherson.
No.
And Mayor Hedding.
No.
Motion failed.
Okay, so I'll give a little discussion and then perhaps a motion. Given the percentages of what happens at the current visitor center. I can't believe TBID could be interested at all in funding this much money or any literally amount of money to do any kind of study. I think that would be terribly unfair. Two, I totally concur with Mr. Collins, and I know because I'm on the VR subcommittee with Councilmember McPherson and know his load. They're inundated with work right now, and it would be very difficult. I don't also think it's fair to say to the chamber, just because you have the contract to run the visitor center go out and do a major study to bring back information. My sense is perhaps the model for visitor center utilization and tourism is changing and evolving, and if it's wayfinding to physical attributes, that's one thing and may change the recommendation because of the extensive costs. And if it's not significantly directing people to opportunities to provide revenue to the city, like hotels that produce TOT, retail entities that produce sales and goodwill for our businesses, and sales tax revenues for the city, then I can't get behind an extensive, expensive contract such as this. My motion would be to very simply ask, I'm going to be careful about whom I ask, I'm going to ask council to consider appointing a two-member subcommittee to review visitor center best practices and identify visitor center performance measures specific to tourism, and develop specific recommendations by April 1st for changes in the visitor center concept and location for the city of Morro Bay. That would be my motion.
I will second that motion for purposes of discussion.
Okay. So...
Would you be willing to extend that time limit by a couple of weeks?
Sure.
Okay.
Absolutely. I'll amend my motion to April 15th.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there a second on that?
Yes.
Second. That. Okay.
Second.
So a motion by myself to ask for an appointment of a two-member committee or volunteers that might be interested in working. And I know there will be staff involvement, but I know council's willing to do a lot of work too. And bring that back with those specifics by April 15th.
I volunteer.
Well, any discussion on the motion, first of all? I know you'll volunteer.
I've already said I approve it. That raises my level of support.
Okay. All right, good. So
I volunteer also.
Okay. So it sounds like I'll add a second part to my motion, if I can, that I would suggest appointing council members McPherson and Davis to that subcommittee. Would you add that as a second, council member McPherson?
I will add that as a second.
So does that need to be two motions, or Chris, I need help here.
It can be one motion to assign a task to a subcommittee and then agree on what the task is.
Okay. Good. So I'll make that as a single motion to appoint Councilmember Davis and McPherson to a council-appointed subcommittee to work with staff to bring back a review of visitor center best practices, identify visitor center performance measures specific to tourism, and develop recommendations regarding funding for said entity by April 15th. Second?
Second.
Okay. So we have motion to second. Further discussion?
A quick question. Is SoCal a resource for us?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. And they should be able to provide, make this easier.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the chamber, hopefully.
Well, I know the chamber. Of course the chamber.
Discuss.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
I'm glad we got the motion there.
Yeah, I know.
So I do remember that meeting quite a while back when we talked about what is a visitor center and all the different concepts. And when I think about this city and our structural financial deficit issues, I think, how can we get things done in a different way, in an exciting way, for free, that differentiates us from other cities like ours? And when this location came up, my first thought was, wow, this is a great location. It's on the Embarcadero. It's this great space. But the more I think about it, and as we've discussed it, I think we should explore a different model. And by that I mean with the subcommittee. I remember in Beverly Hills, when you used to drive into Beverly Hills, there'd be people by the side of the road, free maps to the Stars homes. And, you know, I would stop just to get the map because it was fun. I wouldn't really have the guts to go up and drive around and look at the homes, but
It was a fun thing to do. And in the meeting with Erica a number of months ago, we talked about ambassadors who could be stationed around the city, who would be mobile. People want to talk to people. We can always do an app, right? But that costs money, and maybe that's not the way to go. People want to talk to people. Who are they going to talk to? Wherever they are. They're going to talk to the guy at the gas station, or they're going to talk to the store owner, or they're going to talk to the person that's walking down the sidewalk. Or if we have ambassadors who could be volunteers who love the city, who want to do this, who are knowledgeable, they could be stationed throughout the city with a colorful flowered vest or something. And I think this is the kind of thing we need to look at, something that's different, something that people will remember about Morro Bay along the trail of finding out what the events are and what's a good place to eat. So that's kind of what I'm looking for, and I hope the subcommittee will explore that, those kinds of models, and just come up with a different paradigm that's exciting and that will differentiate Morro Bay from the rest of the coastal town. So that's my two cents.
Great comments, Jeff. I appreciate that. Yes, Councilmember Davis.
Yes, I feel a need to answer Mr. Robb's question. We do not own the PG&E right. property, so that's not available to us.
That's yeah. Good point. Thank you. I will call the question.
Mayor Heading.
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson.
Yes.
Councilmember Addis.
Yes.
Councilmember Davis.
Yes.
And Councilmember Heller.
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
All right. Very good discussion. Thank you, Council, for that. Thank you, audience, for bearing with us. And that moves us to item D, Council Declaration of Future Agenda Items. Anything that looking right, looking left, seeing none. I will adjourn the meeting. The next regular meeting of the Morro Bay City Council will be held on Tuesday, March 10th, 2020 at 5:30 p.m. at the Veterans Memorial Hall, located at 209 Surf Street, Morro Bay, California. The City Council will adjourn now and move into closed session at City Hall, 595 Harbor Street, in 10 minutes. Thank you, and good evening.
Red, I can't believe he voted no on his own motion. That's a first for me. You never know. You never know. Alrighty.